Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Evening, Mr. Edwards.
Good evening, sir. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. How have you been?
I've been wonderful. Thank you. Yourself?
Doing fairly well. That is good. All right, folks, we're going to be starting the call here in about a minute or so. All right, everybody. Good evening.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course, so it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of. If it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of how you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to Your Remedies in the Law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to Your Remedies in the Law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you'll get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedom's Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, so winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your Remedies in the Law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of America's Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers paying us to record for advertising at your Remedies in the Law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at your Remedies in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if we can dispose properly and then answer properly, then we can all learn something from it.
All right. Well, that is our ramble for this evening. I've been gone for a little while, but it's exciting to be back on here. So at this time, I'm going to turn the call over to Mr. Edwards. Mr. Edwards is actually going to be our speaker for this evening. Going to be discussing various matters of the lawyer. You heard that right.
Various matters pertaining to the lawyer. You got that right. Before we delve into this, we have a first-time caller from Louisville, Kentucky. I'm unmuting your phone at the moment. And if you'd be so kind as to share how you heard about our call tonight and maybe share your first name, it'd be great.
Yes.
There you go. Go ahead.
Yes. Yes. My name is Christopher Adams, and I heard about this through a friend of mine, Dexter McCain.
Wonderful. I know that I know Dexter. I talked actually to him earlier today. Most excellent. Thank you. Let me pull this over here. Good deal. All right. So tonight's, first off, John had other commitments to tonight, and it's rare, but he had to take the night off. So I'm left in the position of being your speaker for this evening. And I've got something that I thought would be very interesting to talk about, and that is about lawyers and attorneys. So, I hear somebody saying once, buckle up, Spanky, we're about to get into it. So the first question is, should I hire an attorney? This is a question that each must answer for themselves. However, before making that decision, you might wish to consider the following questions and the actual answers that apply to them. First question, to what or to whom is an attorney's first duty? The answer to that question is, as we consult the latest Corpus Juris Secundum, That's the Legal Encyclopedia. Go to Volume 7, Section 4, and you'll find this answer. It's titled Attorney and Client. His first duty is to the court and to the public and not the client. And wherever the duties to his client conflict with those he owes as an officer of the court and the administration of justice, the former must yield to the latter, meaning the client has to take a back seat to the administrations of the court. The office of attorney is indispensable to the administration of justice and is intimate and peculiar in its relationship to and vital to the well-being of the court. An attorney has a duty to aid the court in seeing that actions and proceedings in which he is engaged as counsel are conducted in a dignified and orderly manner, free from passion and personal animosities, and that all causes brought to and are at issue are tried and decided on their merits only. So that's who the attorney has his first duty to, is the court. I want to add, secondly, his duty then is to the Bar Association of the state that he is a member of. The Bar Associations of each state have policies, public policies, they call them, and all members of that state bar must honor those public policies at all times. So you got now, in first place is the court, as an officer of the court. The second place is the Bar Association that they are a member of. Are you in third? No. Third is his own shingle, his business. If he can't make one and two happy, first and second place happy, how is he going to be profitable in his business? The answer is he can't. He has to go along to get along, be one of the good old boys. So one, two, and three are always in front of every client an attorney has. You're always number four. Second question. What is the legal relationship between an attorney and his or her client? If one appears before any court in the interest of another and moves the court to action with respect to any matter before it or of legal nature, such person appears to be an advocate, as that term is generally understood. The phrase, as an advocate in a representative capacity, as used in the statute regulating the practice of law, implies a representation distinct from officer or other regular administrative corporate employee representations. A client is one who applies to a lawyer or a counselor for advice and direction in a question of law, or commits his cause to his management in prosecuting a claim or defending against a suit in a court of justice. One who retains the attorney is responsible to him for his fees and to whom the attorney is responsible for the management of the suit. One who communicates facts to an attorney, expecting professional advice. Clients are also called, and now this is where the rubber meets the road, clients are also called wards of the court in regards to their relationship with their attorney. Wards of the court. That's got an ominous sound to it. What is a ward of the court? Well, Montgomery versus Erie Railroad Company and Davis's Committee versus Loney, 290 Kentucky 644. It says, wards of the court, infants and persons of unsound mind placed by the court under the care of a guardian. So when you hire an attorney, you're telling the court that you are either an infant or you are of unsound mind. Okay. Do you need to challenge jurisdiction? Oh, now we cover this all the time, don't we? All the time. In propria persona, you've heard people say, well, I'm filing pro se. No. You don't never file pro se. We'll get to that maybe later. In propria persona, is one's proper person. It was formerly a rule in pleadings that the pleas to the jurisdiction of the court must be pled in propria persona, because if pled by an attorney, they admit to the jurisdiction, as an attorney is an officer of the court, and he's presumed to plead after having obtained leave, which admits to the jurisdiction, which is pro se. So the conclusions of law: when you hire an attorney, you become a ward of the court and a second-class citizen, and you admit to the jurisdiction of the court in the matter at hand. Two, you can't hire an attorney if you want to challenge jurisdiction. It's physically impossible. And three, if you want to challenge jurisdiction, the only way that you can do it is either as propria persona or sui juris. Well, wait a minute, what's sui juris? Sui juris is someone who has corrected their status. And having corrected their status, sui juris, from the Latin, is one who stands in their own right. That's what sui juris means, standing in your own right. So let's recap this. You've hired an attorney, and I'm sure you've researched both sides. I know that they have spoken to you, the attorneys, that were so nice and considerate, and they only charged you $60 for a consultation. I'm here to give you some bad news. What I'm about to tell you is only a fraction of the deceit your attorney is involved in. For starters, did you know that your attorney's first duty is to the court and not to you? We've covered that. Well, you say you don't believe it, look up State versus Stokes, 243 Northwest 2nd, 372. Also look up Harrison versus State, 2311 Indiana, 147. It is a sad but very true that there are many more cases which state what we've just said. It's also my duty to inform you that when you hire an attorney, you are then a ward of the court. Reference Splicker versus Hankin, 188, F. 2nd, 35. So now that you have hired an attorney and you are a ward of the court, I've got some really bad news for you. Ward of the court is either a person of unsound mind or an infant. Davis Committee versus Loney, 290 Kentucky, 644. 162, Southwest 2nd, 189 and 90. Now that you have deemed yourself insane, I guess your testimony will actually mean nothing when you testify in court. Did your attorney know this? Of course he did. That attorney does not seem so honest now, do they? Don't take my word for it. Even in a court, let's see what the Almighty One says. Read Luke chapter 11. Go to your Bibles and read Luke, the book of Luke, chapter 11, and that will tell you what you might want to hear about attorneys. All right, so let's continue. We're having fun, aren't we? All right, state bar rules. This is interesting. At Article 3, Section 2, enrollment in the state bar, quote, each person who becomes licensed to practice law is required to enroll in the state bar within 10 days before or after receiving a license to practice law. That's strange. Enrollment in the bar and licenses are not the same. The bar cannot license anyone. It's quite simple to see that a great fraud and conspiracy has been perpetuated on the people of America. The American Bar Association is an offshoot from the London Lawyers Guild and was established by people with treason in mind. They have accomplished 98-99% of their goals. The New World Order, the cabal, is in the saddle now. American people start the job for them, and then before their New World Order bosses, the international bankers, they're gaining the remaining 1%. American lawyers should check out the historical records, and they'll find that the first thing is eliminated is the people in a power shift. No matter who wins, lawyers and judges, the power shift switches to them, for they always have proven themselves unworthy of any trust from either side. Luke chapter 11, verse 52, woe unto you. Now, if you don't understand what the word woe means, it's actually a curse. You're being cursed. Woe unto you, lawyers, for you've taken away the key of knowledge. You've entered not in yourselves, and them that were entering into you hindered. Luke chapter 11, verse 52. The American Bar Association are actually traitors in our midst. The founding fathers who wrote our Constitution and formed our government made it very clear that it was a free enterprise system. Free enterprise. It wasn't a capitalistic enterprise. It was free enterprise. It wasn't private enterprise. It was free enterprise. And it was a free enterprise to all citizens who are all equal under the law. And this was in total contrary distinction to what they had experienced in Europe. Under a free enterprise system, any citizen who was willing to risk his time and his money, they could go into business. The public, with the freedom of choice, can patronize this business or decide they don't like the service or the product and stay away. In a private or capitalistic system, only the privileged elite can go into certain businesses and professions, such had been practiced in Europe for ages, making the public their captive customers. The European bankers, the financial cartels, decided to change America to the same system that they had so they could take over this government, and they sent British lawyers over here to organize the American Bar Association on the same order as the English Bar, with only lords who could be the judges and determine who would practice law. In 1909, they incorporated this traitorous group in the state of Illinois and had the state legislature, which was under the control of lawyers, pass an unconstitutional law that only members of this powerful union of lawyers, called the ABA, American Bar Association, could practice law and hold all the key positions in law enforcement and the making of laws. At that time, Illinois then became an outlaw state, and for all practical purposes of reality, they seceded from the United States. Now, yes and no, but they became rogue upon themselves. The Bar Association then sent organizers to all of the other states and explained to these lawyers how much more profitable and secure it would be for them as lawyers to join this union and be protected by its bylaws and its canons. They issued to the lawyers in each state a charter from the Illinois organization. California joined in 1927, and a few reluctant states and their lawyers waited until the 1930s to join when the Treasonous Act became de facto. I mean, it became a fact. And the citizens then became captives. Under this system, the lawyers could guarantee prejudged decisions for the privileged class against the lower class. And this was all made possible by the American Bar Association to favor the right and have unlawfully substituted them in place of constitutional laws. So what is the real difference between the dreaded Klansmen in white robes and fiery crosses and the American Bar Association Klansmen in their black robes sitting on a bench? Aren't they as dictatorial as the KGB and the Gestapo are being accused of? This has fulfilled Orwell's prediction for 1984 and made it, in fact, the Black Robe Cult. Various groups have been lawfully stonewalled by the ABA, and the courts suggest we join hands and file an initiative to abolish the American Bar Association, as 17 states have already attempted that, where the citizens have the right to do this through a voting process. If we can do this, it will destroy the power of the Bar Association over the American people. So, one more thing I want to bring up. The American Bar Association was first organized in 1878, right after the Civil War. Its purposes were to promote the administration of justice, to advance jurisprudence, and to uphold the professional honor, and to encourage social intercourse among lawyers. Gerald Auerbach, Unequal Justice, Lawyers, and Social Change in Modern America, made this in 1976. He published it that the Federal Bar Association was officially incorporated by Congress in 1954 at Public Law 662 and Chapter 11. So what I'm sharing with you is all the reasons why it is incumbent of you to never, ever hire an attorney or a lawyer. So how does that work with what John does, who is typically our speaker on the Tuesday night call, or what Bernie does on Saturday, or what GW does on Monday with correcting your status, and what Mr. Slevin does, and he's on the call tomorrow night with regards to establishing your LLCs. The point of it is, when you have an issue, if the issue is involving property, and that property is in a trust, that's Bernie, you can name John or one of John's assistants with limited power of attorney to step in. And because of that limited power of attorney, John, who is not an attorney, real quickly, yes, he did pass law school. And yes, he did pass the California bar exam. He scored second highest, I think, ever. But he's not a member of the bar, never did become a member of the bar. He can step in as defender of that trust. And you can wash your hands of it and just let him loose, and he goes and takes care of what has to be done. Or if it's against you and your person, then he can coach you. He can teach you. You become the student. He becomes the teacher. And he can walk you through every single aspect, developing the strategies of defense and, in some cases, offense, and how to utilize your unique political status as an American national, otherwise known as a Union state citizen, a citizen of one of the several states of the Union, where you have all the power from the creator of the universe in your rights and immunities that others do not have. So, I've shared with you tonight how hiring a lawyer, hiring an attorney is anathema to any position you would ever hope to take to be successful in a court. It just ain't gonna happen, folks. On the other hand, if you take the bull by the horns, I'm looking here. I'm seeing three people so far on this call tonight. I'm looking at a board that Martin's looking at. They have hired John to teach them, and they've been successful in their traffic case. They've been successful in drug charges. They've been successful, and that's because they came in as an American national, having corrected their status. The courts couldn't touch them, and they had to dismiss the cases for the purpose of justice. And that's what we're doing tonight, is sharing that with you. So, Martin, if you'd be so kind, let's open it up for questions, and I'll be glad to field the best that I can.
Well, that sounds good. Star 2 on your keypad, folks. If you have a question, star 2 to raise your hand. We're calling you one at a time and unmute you and keep ourselves in an orderly fashion in that way. On the Freedoms Radio side, if you're listening to Freedoms Radio, type your question in the rectangular box there. Don't forget to click submit or we won't see it. If you please type your comments or questions there, click submit, and we will be happy to read those out as well. All right.
Okay, remember, if we don't have any questions, we get to go home early.
Which would probably not upset Mr. Edward at all.
Not at all. I've been run ragged all day today. I can tell you what. Nicholas, I see you just joined us. We were talking about attorneys and how and what they're built upon and how they are officers of the court, et cetera. You hired John. You corrected your status and you hired John. Would you mind terribly if I
pulled you out of line and asked you to share with the people tonight your experience in your situation. Just give them a 30,000-foot view. Would you mind doing that for me?
Sure thing. Can you hear me?
Yeah, perfectly.
All right. So, yeah, pretty much I kind of mentioned it a little bit earlier to one of my friends about how, you know, you can go out and spend the money, you know, per situation, if you will. You hire someone else to represent you. And it's usually, you know, they try to make it quick and easy, but it's in the long run, it's a lot cheaper to be able to take a proactive approach in learning and trying to comprehend what is going on, so you don't have to, you know, always rely on outside sources to get you out of trouble, so to speak. Kind of the same with financial situation, but with, you know, what the information providers can do is, you know, provide that information in a format and also discussion, and, you know, having people to talk with about anything that comes up, and not being stuck out in the wind, so to speak. And, you know, I gotta say, it's been a blessing to be able to find the people here and have the knowledge accessible, and being able to, you know, start relying on myself a little more, and also having that help as available as it can be, whenever.
Well, thank you. Those are good thoughts. Anyone else have any thoughts or comments or questions? Press star 2 at your keypad, please. Martin?
Yeah, I'm getting a refresh here. I haven't seen anything pop up. Oh, there we go. Kent. Yep, and West Virginia. Go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me okay?
Sure can.
Okay, good evening. Mike, since these various calls talk about different type of entities or organizations, including LLCs tomorrow evening, trusts on Saturday evening, private interest foundations, et cetera, could you elaborate a little bit on the use of attorneys for entities where one is not stepping forth as a live man or woman?
Yeah, sure. The first thing is, I have never read a flawless contract written by an attorney. There always are what John refers to as hooks and ladders, meaning that there's places within the contracts that are specifically vague and designed to allow for future controversy, to perpetuate their income, if you would. And then with regards to dealing with false, you know, what do you call it, straw men, legal entities, persons. Yeah, fictitious entities, which is what a person is. If you read the Constitution, it talks about people, we the people, persons is actually a legal term for an artificial entity. So in working through what I refer to as the team, you are always being dealt with as a flesh and blood man or woman. I'm sorry, you can't have 70 or 80 other genders. It's not allowed. You're a man or a woman, and you're flesh and blood. And having corrected your status, you are in to enjoy the rights and immunities of that which our Creator gave us, and that which our founding fathers placed as an estoppel against the government to interfere against. So, does that answer your question, Cap?
No, I wanted for not only my benefit, but for the benefit of the audience, I wanted you to talk a little more about when it comes to representation of an entity. For example, what Mr. Slevin talks about with an LLC, if an LLC had to defend itself or were to get sued, if a trust were to have to defend itself as an owner of a piece of property or be sued, maybe get it, you know, a little bit into the entities, the more complicated horseshoe entities with Bernie, the offshore trust, the private interest foundations, because there are times where I believe you as the living or breathing man or woman is not going to be able to step forth in propria persona or sui juris to actually take the lead role. There are times where you're going to have someone else doing that. Now, you alluded to that by saying that one could retain John or the team, you know, and you could just leave it to them, or you could, you know, just use them as educators and go off and do this yourself. But I was suggesting that there are times, even with the entities that are being talked about on these various calls, where that might not be possible and you may not be able to do it yourself. You may need a quote-unquote officer of the court. Now, if you disagree with that because of the way the entities are set up on the LLCs, et cetera.
I disagree with it vigorously, yeah.
Okay, so I want you to tell us that.
All right, the reason I disagree vigorously is because, again, the moment you hire an attorney, you are considered mentally challenged. And because the attorney is an officer of the court, you've granted their jurisdiction. Now you're fighting in their court, their arena. You've got the judge, a member of the state bar. You've got the prosecutor or the plaintiff in civil cases, a member of the state bar. And you've got your defending attorney, a member of the state bar. You got three wolves deciding what's going to be on the menu for lunch. All right, so there is never a situation wherein I can possibly imagine hiring an attorney to do the matter. Now, when you hire someone who is trained as an attorney, like John and several others are, even the paralegals, when they're trained in this capacity, they operate both sides at the same time. They know how to follow the due process that they're expected to follow, but they're not afraid to invoke violations of the judicial canons. They're not afraid to file criminal complaints. And then they're not afraid in assisting you, if your flesh and blood gets involved, assisting you to defend yourself with your natural or constitutional rights. There's no win that they can muster without committing treason of office. And then when that happens, well, there's a whole bunch of buckets of tools that we can work out of violating the judicial canon laws or filing criminal complaints or filing a federal lawsuit for deprivation of rights under color of law. These are things that no attorney would do, but the team would do without embarrassment simply because it's the law. Hollywood, the drama is over with. It's the law. And when they violate the law, they pay the penalty for it. That's why I advocate, and John's coming around to it, that, and when time is available, he'll be working on it, I'm sure, is that any time in a traffic situation, within the week of having had a traffic ticket, there will be a federal lawsuit filed against that law enforcement officer for deprivation of rights under color of law. And before your first hearing that paperwork will be in front of the prosecutor as well as the judge. And when you get, if you still get to that first hearing, then you're going to automatically name the prosecutor to join that lawsuit of deprivation of rights under color of law. And now the judge is simply saying, and stammering probably, by the way, that we need to postpone this hearing for another day so that we can investigate this further. And, of course, that court date will never appear. Jennifer Sue is a perfect example of that, having gone through that route without filing the lawsuit against the courts, but just ending up in the same place.
I guess, what you know, I appreciate everything you're saying, and I understand that, and I think it's excellent that within a week's time of a traffic ticket that would be filed and that would put them on notice. But the point I was trying to get to, and maybe I didn't delineate it very well, but I wanted to get to the point of where there's an artificial entity established within a state jurisdiction, such as an LLC. There are times that you're going to be prevented by the commercial system from going in and representing that. So I wanted you to talk to those issues, because on these calls, we talk about the formation of those type of entities.
Specifically, Mr. Slevin's LLC, that's the only one I'm interested in, because that's the only one that any of our students are going to be involved with. The LLC can name someone to be a part owner of it, or have limited power of attorney within that LLC, and step into the courtroom without being a lawyer or a member of the bar, and continue from there.
Okay.
And further off, if you remember, on the Wednesday night calls when Mr. Slevin explains it, the people that actually are benefiting from this unique LLC of Mr. Slevin's, they're not on any of the paperwork. They're not even there.
Well, I'm thinking, so you'll correct me if I'm wrong, please, but I'm thinking that once somebody does that and comes forward, you know, because part of the story, as you just said, with the LLC is there's no names, and even though other states such as Nevada or Delaware or Wyoming, et cetera, as he says, has a list of names, but they will protect those names, that's still a list that could be somehow uncovered by someone that was very judicious. Now, there is no list, from what he's saying, in New Mexico, but once someone voluntarily, if I was the opposition and I was looking to find out, well, who the heck is behind this operation, because there's nothing in New Mexico filed anywhere, one of the things that could be done is file some action and wait for this representative to pop up and find out, well, who's really behind this. So would we be doing ourselves some kind of disservice by stepping forward in that situation? You know, the other side has all kinds of tricks up their sleeve.
Yeah, it's, my daddy used to say it's better to keep your mouth shut and let everyone think you're a fool than to open it and remove all doubt. Absolutely, you keep your mouth shut. You don't volunteer or step forward. And through Mr. Slevin's LLC, everything disappears because there's no record of it in that capacity of any living person.
Mm-hmm. Well, my point.
So
my
I'd like you to bring that question up tomorrow night for Mr. Slevin. I think that's a great question.
Okay. All right.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Next up, we've got Ed in Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah. Let's see. Am I off mute?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Along those same lines, I would think that once having corrected status, we're not under control of, like, say, PennDOT or Ohio DOT or any of the DOTs. We're not under control of any of the regulatory agencies, and like with even, and I think that's why you've made it necessary to do the correction of status before doing any trust work or any such corporation souls. private foundation. What's the term for the foundation? You had said something else.
The private interest foundation?
Yeah, private interest foundation. And I'm, to my thinking, I would understand those all to hinge upon the correction of status, and that even as they might be able to be looked at as entities, they're really just relationships between people. And so they don't really come under control of the states, which are municipal control systems. You getting what I'm saying there?
I'm listening.
And so I don't, I think that the main thing to do is they, if they come after you, you just, oh, I'm sorry, you present your correction of status, and that's the end of the story. Am I not correct?
Well, once you've corrected your status, there's nothing in the Federal Code of Regulations that applies to you, period.
Nothing there that addresses you, right.
So we've gone so far this year, you know, we've been exposed to this, correcting your status. We've sharpened our teeth a little bit on the first three students that have been processed through this. We have a couple of more students that were in the continuing in the process, and it's looking good. We haven't yet gone anywhere aggressively offensive against any of the actors, prosecutors, judges, et cetera, because so far they've yielded. So I'm saying that I'm saying that the thing that's been developed here under the team is absolutely brilliant, and it's yielding the results that we're hoping for. However, I anticipate that we will be getting even more aggressive in the future.
I think we're in agreement.
Okay. Any other questions, Ed?
No, I always have more, and I can never think of them.
Well, we'll take you off and press star 2 again. We'll bring you back.
Yeah, all right.
All right. Next up, we've got Chris in Kentucky. Go ahead, Chris.
Yes. So earlier on in the conference call, you were talking about how your correction of status in the team can help you in multiple ways, like, you know, in the judicial system. Because these, you know, the team that you have haven't actually, you know, became a person of the court, right? And their interests are more for the actual client than they are for, first and foremost, the, you know, the courts. And you had alluded to some things about how they could even help you, you know, with traffic violations. Drug law, like drug, you know, issues, things like that. Now, specifically, you know, maybe even something else like a, you know, a protective order that may have been, you know, falsely filed, or through divorce cases and things like that. I could see how you could, you know, take that your assets and put them into, you know, a trust, right? And then they would have to fight that trust. Now, for specific things that are against an individual, like those traffic violations, drug charges, right, maybe a protective order or something like that, could you kind of allude a little bit more on how that would, I guess, help you in those types of situations? Because, you know, forgive my ignorance, I'm no attorney or anything like that. I'm just an engineer, and I'm kind of curious, you know, with, I guess, changing your status, right, to an American national like that, you're probably not held by the same laws and regulations, even as a person, right, that you would be otherwise. But I'm kind of more curious, like, if you could go into a little bit more detail on those personal effects and those laws against the actual person and charges against an actual person, and how that team would be there to, you know, help you through that process.
The Achilles heel that the current system has is that it's a closed system for, as one court case described, as property and franchises of the United States. It's a closed system to deal with the property and franchise of the United States, which is the persons we call United States citizens. So by correcting your status, you have completely removed yourself from that system. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not going to try to pursue you. They will, absolutely. And they will pursue you with vigor. With the three different students that have been successful thus far, at no time was it necessary to go after any one of them with deprivation of rights under color of law. Wisdom was found by the courts that they had placed themselves in a position of jeopardy, actually treason of office, by the paperwork that came in that the students were taught under, and then ended up they published them themselves into the court record. And there was no end for them, for the state to pursue that was going to be profitable. I don't remember what movie it was, but the only way the punchline was in this computer game that just ended up destroying the world, no matter how many times or different ways you played it, the only way to win was not to play. And that's the scenario that the court is faced with, that they cannot proceed because they cannot win. So therefore they withdraw. And that's what's happened in the three cases that have come to fruition. There's two more cases right now that are in process, and the same pattern is being followed, and we expect the same outcome, prayerfully.
Okay. You had mentioned a drug case.
Mm-hmm.
Year-old
man.
Okay. Is there anything that you could go into a little bit more detail like that? Because, you know,
sure.
I mean, yes, the like from my point of view, right, yes. I mean, currently I haven't changed my status. Definitely something I'm definitely going to be looking into because of these things. But, you know, they come at you with charges, right? Like, oh, mm-hmm. you've violated, you know, yes, okay, you've got a team there to help you along, right?
The team.
But I guess, you know, how do you, like, potentially get out of that? Because, you know, I would imagine that they, you know, are going to try to put you in jail and all these other things.
Yeah, they did. This is a 63-year-old man, mild-mannered fellow, and he's not a druggie, but he finds that with his aging
Michael,
body. Yeah.
Michael, could I
yes?
Could I jump in on that one?
Oh, my goodness. Look who showed up.
I still had a hot day with a married woman, but we reached a point that I could step out to. She's fellowshipping with friends. That particular one, there was multiple felony charges, and they got multiple felony grand jury indictments. And what happened was is that this gentleman kind of was a little on the sleepy side of things. He didn't get his status corrected till after he got charged, and which is kind of kind of crowding things a teeny weeny bit, but nonetheless, the Father granted us grace, and we were able. And this gentleman, in his pleading, he pointed out that his status had been, you know, what his status actually was, and that this was a victimless crime, and that he couldn't be charged with a victimless crime, there had to be, and his exact words, if I remember, were, I need a verified complaint from an injured party with justiciable standing to complain, and that the officer that made the arrest did not constitute an injured party with justiciable standing to complain. The prosecutor did not constitute an injured party with justiciable standing to complain, and neither did the court. And what happened was that he hadn't even been arraigned yet. That was something that, and see, that's something that isn't possible. Actually, we didn't know. We've never seen a situation where there was multiple felony grand jury indictments of this magnitude, of these charges. We've never seen a dismissal, except in special circumstances where an individual was considering pleading state's evidence. But in each of those cases, the individual had been charged and arraigned. We're still searching to see if there's been any history of anybody that knows of felony grand jury indictments where the prosecutor already went through the trouble of going to the grand jury, making the complaints, and getting the indictments. And usually about that time, it's a soup to nuts done deal. There is no grace in that. But in this case, before he was arraigned, meaning how do you plead, guilty, not guilty, nulla contendere, in his motion to dismiss, we were waiting for the trial or the arraignment date to come up, and all of a sudden she gets a check in the mail, and it's for the bail, and nobody gives up those kind of dollars with those kind of zeros after, you know, after a whole number, unless there's an awful good reason. And to make it short, we inquired with the court, and the court clerk says, oh, didn't you guys get a copy of it? The prosecutor made a motion to dismiss. The prosecutor moved to dismiss, not anybody. You know, and so it was so far. It's been very, very shocking, some of the response that we're getting. I wish that I could say that I know exactly what's going through their minds, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I can't. See, because some of it is that now they realize they're criminally culpable, personally. Two, there's an issue of jurisdiction and the fact that they don't have it. Three, they're violating a civil law, common law, that they cannot, without an injured party that's willing to complain, you cannot have a criminal complaint. And the list goes on, you know, and so do I know exactly what is triggering this in their mind? No. Somebody, a good friend of mine, once used the term barrage defense, and it could be just the fact that they're getting barraged with so much that they just have no desire to attempt to risk coloring outside the lines when they realize how bad it is, and they resign. But so that's as short and sweet as I can make that. Is that helpful at all?
Yes, it does. I have a specific thing that I have in my mind that I am currently dealing with myself. But yes, that does.
We don't know you from Adam, Chris. So why don't you tell us what this particular thing is and give us a good. I mean, you've got an awesome opportunity here. This is John. This is the point of the spear that John's place was to speak tonight. So you've got. A free consultation. Let's go with it right now. Let's make this call.
By the way, when he says I'm the point, think of an iceberg. and there's a point on it, and think of all the ice that's under the water that people can't see. Think of all the people that are behind me on this team, okay? So if you think I'm some kind of, if anybody wants to put up that I'm anything really special onto myself, horse feathers. You know, you would not believe the team of people. And sometimes the added help that we call in from places you couldn't imagine. So don't think that I'm saying anything special, but go ahead, move on.
Yeah, no, I truly appreciate that, guys. So my specific issue is I had a individual that I live with, my wife actually, had filed a protective order with false claims against me and had me evicted from my home. And I currently have already filed for divorce, and she's doing this vindictively. And I have to, you know, go to court over it, right? And I'm kind of wondering, right? I mean, I know that there's the victimless crime, but this instance, right, she is making claims against me that she can't truly prove. And the judge that is, you know, signed off on this protective order is the same judge that actually is currently presiding over my divorce case with this individual. And she technically violated, I think, some many case laws, because we had a hearing specifically was asked how long she has to make a determination on custody and things like that. The judge specifically said that she had 90 days to make that, you know, that ruling. And it was 1 year to the date of that I had to request another hearing, because she had no, you know, she came back and had made no ruling on the divorce case. And then my, you know, wife then files that protective order against me falsely with false claims. And I'm now removed from my home. And my son is also on that protective order as well. So that's kind of my very specific case.
Now, you say, Chris, you said your son is on the protective order, meaning that she has asked for protection from him as along with you. Is that correct?
Yes. So she put on the protective order to where I can have no contact with my son or anything like that, because she is, you know, of course, you know, the parent, but so am I, you know. And there's absolutely no reason why he should be on that protective order.
Okay, so, and this sounds like a lady judge?
Yes, it is.
Okay. We would have to have a little bit of a quiet private huddle. I need to ask some very straightforward questions, and this would not be appropriate. Could you, after the call, or tomorrow, get with Michael and schedule a private appointment?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot involved here, and like Michael was talking about the tip of the spear, or I talked about even the top of the iceberg. We've just got the tip of the spear on the facts, and after we have our little get together there, I may have to spend some time with some team members, and to be able to, after we get a academia on it, to be able to respond with you.
Yeah, no, that's perfectly fine. It's just, you know, it's kind of, there's some other things too that I can let you guys know tomorrow, but you know, she's actually made comments to, her ex-husband, who I have met on a few different occasions. Things like she would never take a child from its mother, right? And then there's all these cases that she's presided over that she's actually never done that in the entire 6 years she's been on this, you know, superior court there in the county. So, yeah, I'm more than happy to have those conversations with you guys.
Yeah, also, if you have a copy of her, any existing orders, et cetera, that you could possibly provide, that would be a blessing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if you can provide the copies of, shall we say, all the fan mail from the court,
yes,
that would be a blessing. Okay,
yep.
Back to you, Michael.
All right. Well, thank you so very much. But actually, it's back to Martin. I'm just I was the speaker tonight, John.
All right. Yeah, you're on that, Chris. Thank you so much. Just press star two if something else comes up for you. And also now we have Kent again in West Virginia. Go ahead, buddy.
Okay. So, Mike, I just wanted you to clarify something. I understood Ed to say that you now had a requirement in order to deal with Bernie's programs that one would have corrected their status and perhaps
negative,
with
negative. No,
yep,
not Bernie.
That's right.
Everybody but Bernie's.
Okay. That's what I wanted you to clarify. Thank you.
All right. Star two on your keypad, folks. If you have a question, star two to raise your hand on the Freedoms Radio side. Type your question or comment in and click submit. And we're clear as of now, Mr. Edwin.
All right. Did you check Freedoms Radio?
I did.
Okay. Thank you. Well, we had a wonderful call tonight. Thank you for allowing me to be the speaker. That's something I don't usually do. And I'm thankful that Brother John showed up because he came in just at the right time. Something to share with you. One of the I audit all the calls that all the information providers do. I set them up. You've got to call me. I get whichever information provider you're associating with on the call, forwarding the emails, et cetera. And I've learned some interesting things ask John just to talk about it in a moment, but he looks at some of the darndest scenarios, like what is the relationship between the prosecutor and the judge? Did they go to the same law school? Are they members of the same country club in addition to the Bar Association? Oh, John, would you just talk about some of the things that you've discovered in the past that just make anyone go,
Well, remember, the jurisprudent community is a small community. And when I was at law, most people that are at law don't, the freshmen don't all just associate with the freshmen, but the sophomores and juniors and seniors and grad students as well. So sometimes you can find a situation where there somebody may be associated transversely over 4 to 6 years in either direction. And hang on. And what happens is that they get to meet quite a few people, and if you end up sitting in a class with somebody, two or three times, and so what happens is that you you learn and you meet a lot of people. So what happens is that the chance that any one of those could consider a long-term career in the jurisprudence in litigation or prosecution or as a jurist on a bench, all of those are possible. And to that end, after you work, most people don't move across the world or across the country when they finish their academia. They usually stay in that area. So chances of you knowing a third or half the people in the jurisprudent community personally arises. So among that, what happens is that as we visitors, or shall we say guests to the festivities, you have to understand that those folks on the other side of that bar, that bench, and the ones on this side, they may have met each other. There's a chance that they've tripped over each other somewhere else in life. So, and especially, just remember this, that all these individuals that do all that they have
and that have known each other since school, remember, they never ever go out to dinner with each other. They never go out and play golf. They, because they're alma maters and they, there's class reunions, they never go to them. So, oops, not. And so what happens is we find out, layers and layers and layers of individuals that all know each other. So just remember that, if you go up there and you're, callous, caustic, unkind, or, even modestly offensive, any one of the other parties can take offense at you, and you can win or lose a case on something that, one party on this side of the bench took offense from with a party on the other side of that bench or the courtroom. So just FYI, please always consider that when you're stepping forward into a courtroom. Back to you, Michael.
Martin?
I mean Martin.
Yes. Thank you. All right, star two on your keypad if you have a question. Or if you're on the Freedoms Radio side, type in your question and or comment and hit the submit button. And of course, once we're done with that, we'll be wrapping it up for the night. So let's go ahead and get those final ones in here. I don't sense that we have too much time left. Ed, go ahead again. You're unmuted, sir.
I just wanted to ask, what is Bernie's call on this same number?
Mm-hmm. Yes, just a different night. Am I correct?
Yes.
Mr. Edwards?
Yeah. Yeah. Same phone number, the same pen, okay. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday evening. There's two other calls that we do that are scripture study calls on Friday night and earlier Saturday evening that have the same phone number but a different pen. And if you're interested in scripture studies, just get in touch with myself, and send me a text or 800 number or whatever, and we'll go from there. And I'll share that with you.
I got to get in touch with you again too. I got some explain to you what's been going on here.
All right, and also stop me if I'm out of place here, Mr. Edward. But it looks, folks, like I'm going to be jumping back into the fray. Maybe even a little bit quicker, a little bit more than maybe what was originally anticipated. So what I'd like to do at this time is go ahead and pass out my email address and let that start working its way through the masses. Is that good, Mr. Edward?
That's mm@yourremedyisinthelaw.com. mm@yourremedyisinthelaw.com.
For Martin Michelson. Thank you. Still nothing else, Mr. Edward. That's it.
All right. Well, Martin, just share a little tidbit with everyone. You had a personal experience where you were under direct tutelage from a former information provider, hence since retired, to Mike Maris, with regards to credit cards. So just share with the group here a little bit about your credit card experience, please.
I was well over $37,000 in credit card debt. My life was frozen, couldn't move. Not going to go into it, but as we say lately, a series of unfortunate events, a very, very long series of unfortunate events to the point where the average man would say, oh, come on, found me in a situation where that's what it was just going to be. So this information provider had been with Mr. Edward for a little bit, a very long time, but a good little bit. And so he immediately recommended him as his point of the spear for credit cards. I got a call with him, I think same day, because I came in hot. I didn't show up saying, hey, you know, maybe not in the future. Weeks down the road, we might have a slight problem. No, it was screaming like they're coming for me. Everybody get down, you know. So, but I got a call, it was later on that same day, just very, very helpful, very eager to help. That was the first thing that struck me, with the team, just very aggressively helpful,
and went over the information with me, what I was going to be looking at, what all would be involved in my teaching and my schooling. Schooling took, I want to say, the meat and potatoes of it really was just one good long call. And then after that, it was pretty much, everything was kind of user friendly for, studying and making up a schedule and all that. And so, just followed the road signs, if you will, and went through the process. And by the time it was all said and done, almost 2 years later, when the dust had settled, I paid nothing. I paid nothing. I went, I think I jumped, I want to say 100 in the teens, maybe 113, 116, somewhere around there in points on my, my beacon. And, with each time something, we would have a hit each time we would go, because that was many different entities that was, sometimes it was, at the most of, three. I think there was actually one time I had four coming after me all at the same time. And then, of course, as quickly as we started moving along, 12 months in, 14 months in, we started going on the offense. And now before they can even send stuff to us, we're sending stuff out. That was huge. And then another big thing that I remember is when one of the big one goes, all the rest of them, they must talk to each other, because all the rest of them seem to do the same thing. They all just kind of slink back into the darkness from which they came, and they just stop calling. They just stop, So, highly recommend it. Highly recommend it. If you're in a position to, my 37 was, well, I don't know if I want to say that, what I ended up coming out of pocket with Mr. Edward, but it was well worth the education. It really was.
So what we're doing here is that Martin will be taking on two separate roles. One, learning my job, and which he already has the foundation to from years ago. Just needs to get back in the saddle with that, auditing the calls, connecting people, and so forth. And then also to be the initial information provider with regards to credit card issues, not up to it, but not including litigation. Because the end result of this routine, which Martin will be working with you on, ends up in federal court where you're not arguing a debt. You're arguing the violations of the Fair Debt Collections Practices Act and the Fair Credit Reporting Act. So that's not going to happen right away, but it's in the process. But right now we're just starting with the host relationship. Martin, you have a hand raised.
Yes, I see this here. I've got William or Bill in Tennessee.
Yes.
You're unmuted, sir. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yes, actually in Florida.
Oh, outstanding.
I'm in Florida. I had a quick question. I documented my status through the U.S. State Department. I wanted to find out if it would be helpful to document it through the Florida Department of State.
John?
I apologize. I was muted out of courtesy. The more places you document your status, the better. Back in the 70s, when we first started doing that, The first places we documented the status was with the county clerk's office there in Southern California, and we were filing copies of the affidavits back then. But after we had noticed the State Department, but there's as many places as possible, absolutely.
Okay. Do you recommend just going through the clerk's office, or you recommend going right straight to the Florida Department of State?
Yes. There are some states where the county clerk's office will still let you record documents like that. There's been a drastic migration away from that policy, or away from allowing that to a policy where they do not let you file anything except what fits in their little box. But yeah, absolutely, go to the Florida Department of State first, and then go to the county clerk and file a copy of everything you filed with the U.S. State Department and the Florida Department of State.
I see. Okay, so Florida Department of State first, and then take a copy of that and put it file it with the clerk's office, the local clerk's office.
Bingo.
Okay.
John, would you actually say to go on and send a copy to the sheriff in the county and the surrounding counties that you operate through, and heck, here in Florida, send it to 66 counties? Sheriff?
If we were to start doing that, I may know one or two sheriffs personally, retired sheriffs and even sheriffs that are currently, individuals that are currently sheriffs. While it could produce a trail, a documentation trail that could be helpful somewhere down the line, I'm going to tell you right now, it's going to turn into something like the story of the Republic of Texas, where the basic tenets of what they were going after was absolutely stand up and correct. But the term Republic of Texas is a byword right now. That's the last thing we want to induce. So just FYI, I know I had the same question from me a couple of times this, in the last couple of weeks from homeschool families. Only one of them was in Florida, but this homeschool family of three children, the mom wanted to do that. She wanted to do that so desperately, and she was going to show them. And I says, it's probably not a good idea. She was working with a completely different group of people that I had worked with back in the 70s and 80s. I'll tell you this, that a friend of mine who's a retired sheriff of the largest county in Texas, he already knows that I've helped people do that and has known about it for years. And Ron called me up and he says, John, do you know this person and know that? And he says, I says, where are we going with this question first? And he goes, well, she apparently tried sending it to a whole bunch of people, and this is just only a few months back. And he called me in August, and we talked about this, and he told me about it the first part of August. In fact, right before that issue that we did, Michael, in August.
Right.
And he said that things were... she was making a nuisance of herself, and two of his friends, which were sheriffs in Florida, were so ticked off that they, when they found out that she barraged everybody, that what they did was they have a sticky note with her license numbers on their dash. So I don't, Winning enemies and influence friends away from you, that's probably the path that would go. Probably don't want to do that.
Well, one of the things that I had shared with the people on the call before you came on the call was that that you were looking, that you and I had discussions regarding that within the week after someone received a citation, that the law enforcement officer, on a traffic matter at least, would be on the receiving end of a federal lawsuit of deprivation of rights under color of law.
Do you want to address that in your where you are with?
Yeah. Yeah, we can. Now, and by the way, there's, you know, you and I talked about last year about possibly doing, you know, all the counties and everything else, and I just haven't had a chance to follow up with you. And I know back then I was a proponent of that. I may not be a proponent of that idea anymore. There are certain times when in certain traffic stops that if when a violation of your civil rights occurs, that well, let me ask you. Let me ask all the listeners this question. Is it wiser to appeal illegal, evil, or wrong behavior, or is it wiser just to prosecute it, to find the correct statute and the path and prosecute it? You know, that's just a question. I never was very bright. I'm not the sharpest pencil in the box, but my own personal thoughts are, at this juncture, it should be prosecuted. And when somebody commits a crime, I don't know how wise it is to wait days, weeks, or months until the tenements of that crime continue to go up the food chain, you know, or you get prosecuted for it. I don't know how wise it is to wait. You know, if they're prosecuting you and they're committing a crime in doing so, or attempting to prosecute you and committing a crime in doing so, is it good to wait days or weeks or even months before you begin to prosecute them for their criminal act? Or should it be done right away, just like they feel compelled to do so? Those are just, you know, just some casual thoughts. So, you know, when you have a traffic stop that does constitute a violation of your civil rights under color of law, use that as a potential thermometer to determine what you should do. Back to you, Michael.
Yeah. Actually, back to Martin. I think it's time
to
say
goodnight.
Oh, Martin,
excuse me. Back to Martin. Back to you, Howard.
All right. Thank you so much. Let me get a sweep here real quick. Actually, it already started on it. I've already got anticipation kicking back in. I can already tell. All right. Yeah, we're good to go, Mr. Driver.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very, very much for attending tonight. I hope you were not disappointed. I know that with John appearing at the end of the call in the last 40 minutes, it actually rallied a much better presentation about what we're talking about. I hope you enjoyed what you learned about lawyers and how absolutely evil the system is that is designed to yield as much of the fruit of your labor as possible for them that don't really work for it. Tomorrow night, join us when Mr. Slevin will appear with his LLC and how it will benefit you to operate through this LLC, whether you are an employee, converting you to the position of a worker without taxes, and how it affects you if you are an entrepreneur and how it benefits you there as well. Oh, there was one more question here, John, that came in from Jennifer Sue. Let me see if I can find it real quick. It didn't come in the front channel.
I have a note for her.
Yeah. About completing the NYS, Department of Taxation and Finance Office of Real Property Tax?
Yep.
You want to address that question and answer right now?
You are uniquely aware of my current workload for this week going all the way into Thursday of this coming week. And so with you knowing that, it's my intention to address hers right after that.
Okay. Most excellent. Just so that everyone on the call understands, the priorities are not because you paid to have a teacher and you're becoming a student and therefore feed me, feed me, feed me. Its priorities are based upon imminence of loss of property or freedom. That's what takes first priority over anything else. And John blessedly is wrapping up with three people over the next week, basically. He's already been on a roll for the past week on it. Three of the four home foreclosures, all appearing to, they haven't settled yet, but all appearing to a happy ending. So that's where we are with that. And then as soon as that's over with, John will be focusing on another drug and weapons case, bringing it up to speed, as well as taking care of what Jennifer Sue is talking about here. So thank you all for joining us this evening. John, thank you so very much for stepping in. You bailed me out again, rescued here. To see you tomorrow night, everyone, for Mr. Slevin's call. And until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.